Blog Talk Radio.
It was horrific, and I remember the architects of apartheid. I remember reading this, not to justify apartheid in any way, but that fear of what happened to them in the concentration camps. They didn't want that to ever happen to them again. So apartheid was almost a consequence of what happened in the concentration camp, feeling powerless, of feeling threatened, of almost being wiped out in South Africa. They said, we will not allow this to happen again. So we are going to rule in a certain way that this will not happen again. And interesting that a very similar thing is happening to Israel, having been the survivors of the Holocaust and their genocide during World War II, and moving into the Middle East, or moved into the Middle East for their own safety out of Europe. They're doing exactly the same thing, creating an apartheid state. And it's the cycle of trauma and not healing and working through that trauma feels like a pattern in the human psyche, where those who have seen the horrors and being victims of those horrors seem to become the perpetrators of that same horror on someone else. Mm-hmm. And it feels like that victim psyche is not broken through or healed. It's like on the extreme side, when an abused child becomes an abuser as an adult, or someone who's sexually or physically violated becomes the violator later on in life, because somehow it's not being worked through and healed and dealt with and understood that there are dark spaces within the human psyche through suffering and pain and trauma, massive trauma, collective trauma.
Exactly. It has all the parallels of what's going on now in the Middle East. And incidentally, for the audience, what Kathy is talking about when she mentioned the very high rate of women and children who perished during the horrific acts by the British. And when we mention Boers, what we mean are Boers is the term, the Dutch term for farmer, which, again, just to go back in a little bit of history, the British and the Dutch were in great, great conflict for rule in South Africa. And so at some stage or some years, it was the Dutch that were ruling South Africa, and the other years, it was the British. And so hence that war. Just to bring the audience up to speed. So that's what we mean when we say the Boers. And with about 26,000 women and children who died in those concentration camps. And what Cassie is mentioning is this history, this vicious cycle of abuse repeating itself. And that's what we're beginning to see in so many areas around the planet, but most profusely right now, the situation against the Palestinians, not just in the Gaza Strip, but it is now expanding so rapidly in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. And how do we, as a society, be silent and quiet about this and watch it unfolding and not do anything? And that's where South Africa's role is so pivotal in this. And how to break that cycle, because this is what we are trying to do. All those protests around the planet for ceasefire, what are we truly wanting? We're wanting to break the cycle of violence, break that cycle of continuation of traumatic experiences, then perpetrated against others without any conscience. And this is so important for us as human beings right now, to say in our lifetime, what have we done to break this vicious cycle of violence and genocide?
Absolutely. And South Africa is a country that made the transition, which many internationally thought would be impossible without a civil war taking place. And, you know, we managed to make a drastic transformation from an apartheid state to a democratic one. And that was possible because everyone had to come around the table together and talk about a very complex and difficult situation of making this change possible and taking the human cost into account, because we could have, and we were very much on the edge of civil war when Chris Hani was assassinated. That was when the country got to the brink of a possible civil war. It took a lot of restraint from our leaders on all sides to prevent that from happening.
And that's an important point that you bring up, Cassie. In times of horrific acts, we still have a choice of how we respond. And I think that's critical for every leader and for every nation to consider before engaging in acts of severe violence. There is an alternative, and we need to consider that first and foremost.
Yes, human beings are capable of much empathy and critical thinking and being able to see all sides of something unfolding before taking any kind of action that could be destructive. If we put everything else aside, differences of color, race, culture, language, religion, sex, we strip ourselves of that. We realize at the end of the day, we're just human beings, and that's our commonality as a species. And when we are able to see that, then possibly we're able to speak to each other, negotiate, respect each other and the needs of the other. And I think in these 30 years, of course, we've had highlights and lowlights and great things to celebrate, things to be upset about. We have violence in this country. We have gender-based violence, which is a huge problem. We have disparities between the rich and poor, social issues of geography and infrastructure and all of that. But the things that are important to remember is humanity, empathy. 2020 was a good year to test that for most countries in the world. And in South Africa, it was a massive test. We had one of the hardest lockdowns in the world and one of the longest. And during that time, when those on the breadline weren't able to work, and those who are often marginalized groups in the country economically, geographically, the only way we pulled through was the organizations and individual citizens who came to the party. They were able to feed those who couldn't feed themselves. They were able to give food to children who normally received their only meal at school, and the schools were closed for months. And the communities came together and brought food into the townships to feed people. Down the road from where I live, a distillery was turned from making beer because it was, you know, prohibited to produce beer because all the alcohol was being used for sanitizers and all of that. And he turned his distillery into a massive soup making kitchen to feed all those that were homeless and destitute. That's just one example. And that's what it is. It's to remember in times of difficulty our humanity first.
Mm.
And I think that's where Ubuntu, which is a South African term, comes into play, and to understand why South Africa at the ICJ is to understand Ubuntu.
Mm. And that's so important. And you've mentioned how South Africans came together during COVID to help each other. And one of the key organizations and persons that was in the forefront in South Africa was, and still is, the Gift of the Givers, Dr. Suleiman. And he is currently so well in the forefront of assisting and providing aid to Gaza. And here's this history of South Africans coming to play important roles when humanity truly needs us, because we've been there. We know what it feels like to be hungry, to not have food, to not have a home, to feel threatened. And this is where the role of South Africa right now, it's akin to a role model for the rest of the world, because we need to ask ourselves today, with the decisions that we make, the decisions that we take, are we envisioning what's going to happen for generations down the road? Not just for us, because we are not going to be here for much longer, but for our grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Because whatever we're doing right now, whatever decisions we make, especially if it is not for humanity, we are actually going to be carving out a disastrous future for generations of grandchildren and great-grandchildren down the road, who are going to look back